We've been talking about disgust in this episode, and there are certain animals that many people just find gross. Rats, cockroaches, and bats. If you've ever woken up at night to find a bat swooping around your bedroom, as I have, then you know there is something about them that can just seem repulsive. And that's unfair, because bats fill a crucial biological niche. They eat mosquitoes, they pollinate flowers, they do a lot of good. And now they're endangered. Merlin Tuttle is a biologist and the founder of Bat Conservation International. He's also the Indiana Jones of the bat world. He's gone everywhere to find rare species, crawled into caves, swum through crocodile-infested rivers, stared down lions and king cobras and dangerous bandits. Does sound like a movie, doesn't it? Tuttle now has a memoir out about his adventures. It's called The Secret Lives of Bats. He told Steve Paulson that he'll do just about anything to find them.
Well, I've had certainly plenty of experiences getting caught in tight places and roping off 100-foot cliffs in caves in search of bats, but you don't necessarily have to go in caves to find bats. There are bats that live in all kinds of incredible places. One kind that I'll be studying within the next 3 weeks burrows into large termite nests in the tropics and hollows out a cavity in the termite nest and lives with the termites. 2 years ago, I was in Borneo photographing bats that live in pitcher plants. Pitcher plants traditionally are famous for eating whatever comes right. inside.
Wait, so the bats live in the plant?
Yeah. There's a species of bat that actually lives in pitcher plants, and the pitcher plants have evolutionarily figured out that it's much more energetically cost-effective to feed on bat guano that comes every day instead of eating the bat and then going hungry for a long time.
Wow, amazing.
There are even bats that live in colonial spider webs. There are bats that live in crocodile burrows. There are bats that live in all kinds of places.
And they come in all sizes as well. I mean, there are tiny bats. The bumblebee bat, how big is it? Or how small, I should say?
Bumblebee bat weighs about a third less than a penny. I was photographing them just 2 years ago. There are also giant flying foxes, especially out in the Pacific Islands, that have up to 6-foot wingspans. And bats are incredibly intelligent. They form long-term friendships. They adopt orphans. They're the longest-lived mammals by far for their size.
How long do they live?
Some small bats have been found to live over 40 years. And bats don't get cancer or arthritis either.
Now, over the course of your career, you seem to have worn two hats. I mean, you were obviously a very public advocate for bats. You're also a biologist, and you have traveled around the world studying bats. And to do this, you have to go into a lot of very remote places where people don't normally go, like caves, which can be hard to explore, remote wilderness areas, and all of this can get pretty dangerous. I mean, not because of the bats, but because of the environments you're going into.
Yeah. For all the supposed dangers of being around bats, I have handled hundreds of species, have been surrounded by millions at a time for days on end in caves. I'm still waiting for the first bat to ever attack me or give me a disease or in any way harm me. Yet, on the other hand, I've nearly been killed multiple times by people, dogs, elephants, lions, tigers, king cobras. Bats are certainly not the worst of my worries.
Okay, well, let's talk about a few of these adventures that you've had. I mean, it's kind of remarkable hearing about some of the stuff that you've been through. I mean, for instance, you were, once surrounded by bandits in Africa?
Yes, in fact, a good friend of mine who I was with just yesterday, we'd gone to Africa to see if there were bats that homed in on frog calls in Africa. And we'd just finished recording some frog calls out in a marshy area. We'd gotten back in our Land Rover and were just ready to drive off when all of a sudden we looked out and found ourselves surrounded by about a dozen bandits. Fortunately, we had an assistant who had actually been trained by the Israeli Mossad in anti-guerrilla warfare, and he was absolutely phenomenal at dealing with crisis situations. Well, first he told Mike Ryan, the my colleague who is behind the steering wheel, keep the engine running and be ready to do exactly what I say. He spoke a lot of languages, and he had understood, overheard them plotting to kill us. He totally amazed them when he jumped out right into them. You know, they had us surrounded, but everybody was so curious to see this idiot who would jump out in front of all of them. Instead of having us surrounded, the rest of them then came to that side to see him. When he realized they were just about to attack, he made a fake lunge at the leader, and that took them all by such surprise that they all, you know, just kind of automatically jumped back a step or two. And while they were off balance, he dived back into the Land Rover. He'd left the door open behind him, grabbed a big blaster spotlight, yelled at Mike to drive like hell, shone the light out the window into the bandit's eyes, and we were able to escape because now he had them all on one side. But I've actually got photographs of where spears hit the back of the Land Rover as we were leaving.
Wow. So you've had these encounters with people who were rather dangerous. You've also had some encounters with animals. There's one other story I have to ask you about. And you were in Peru and looking for some very rare kind of bat. And you end up, climbing down a cliff, wading through a river, climbing into a cave. Tell me what happened there.
I had just recovered from paratyphoid, which I'd contracted while I was out in the middle of nowhere, living with Compa Indians while studying bats. And first day I felt like I could get up and move around a little bit. This guy who I knew to be a great-great-grandfather offered to show me a cave that had supposedly all kinds of bats in it. Of course, a Batman can't resist hearing about a cave that has all kinds of bats in it. So we hiked for miles, and the Indians don't have good ways of telling you how much further it is. You ask them how far, and they'll say, one more hill, two more streams. And you have no idea how far apart those are. Well, we finally got to where the cave was. The cave turned out that it was at least 100 feet below us. We came out on top of a big cliff. It's one of the most beautiful Edenic sights I ever saw in my life. 100-foot or so waterfall, ferns and all kinds of tropical lianas and constant rainbows. It was really beautiful. But then all of a sudden, this guy, without any hesitancy, starts climbing down liana vines to go down a 100-foot cliff. And he looks a little surprised that we're not quickly, my brother and I aren't quickly following him. So we start climbing down the vines, and we'd get down to a ledge, and we'd climb along the ledge a while, find some more vines, and go down some more. Well, when we got to the bottom, it turned out that you couldn't get to the cave without swimming across a pond. I could see the tracks of an anaconda. We're not talking about a small snake. We're talking about a snake that could eat a person.
Right.
There were piranha. There were electric eels. They're down on the bottom. So if you keep your feet well off the bottom, you're probably not going to get shocked by one. But we nearly drowned trying to keep our headlights and things above water and keep our feet high while we swam across the pond. Then I get to the cave entrance, and it actually was one of the only times that the Indians were wrong about anything. It didn't have any bats in it. It had oil birds, and the oil birds had left a very heavy coating of guano that was just the most putrid, rotting material floating in water at the entrance. We'd taken off our clothes to swim across the pond, and my brother and the Indian were going to hold a mist net out in front of the cave on poles while I chased some bats out to get caught. But then to get in, got past the guano and breathed a sigh of relief. Then the cave got narrower and narrower, and finally I'm pinned in with just my arms up ahead of my, in front of me, and just as I'm getting really nervous about how narrow it is and whether I can back out if I have to, I come to a dead end. So I'm lying there saying, okay, don't panic. You got plenty of time. There's got to be a way of wriggling backwards out of this. Before starting to do that, I kind of turned my head back and tried to look back a little bit, what I hadn't noticed was that not more than just a few inches above my bare back, the ceiling of this passage was covered in scorpions. Well, you can imagine, I just about wore a groove in the floor getting back out.
The adventures of a bat biologist. Are there still scientific mysteries about bats? Are there still things we don't know?
Absolutely.
Do we know how bats migrate? I mean, how they find out where they're going to go?
Not yet. Several species migrate up to 1,000 miles or more south for winter. Other species migrate in all directions. Some migrate north, some east, west, some south to get to a particular abandoned mine or an old cave that has the right conditions to hibernate in.
So how do they find their way? What do you think?
Well, bats are very good communicators, and it's my belief that young bats have to learn from older bats. I have never found young gray bats migrating outside the company of adults. Mother gray bats migrate well ahead of the young, leave the young behind in the fall. And it seems to be the adult males that actually show the young bats how to find the way. I'm amazed when I realize that bat echolocation probably doesn't extend more than 30 feet or so in front of them. They're having to use some pretty incredible navigational skills to cope with the fact that we change the countryside every year, put in highways, put in fields, chop forests, do things that just must change dramatically what it looks like to migrate across. And yet these bats, year after year, figure out where they should go.
Merlin Tuttle is a bat biologist and also clearly indestructible. He's the founder of Bat Conservation International, and he talked with Steve Paulson about his book, The Secret Lives of Bats, My Adventures with the World's Most Misunderstood Mammals.